Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Javadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nirvase Sunivadi Paskatya Deshatarne Vande Ham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Bhattakamam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sri Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitamstam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamstra Anjitalpa Chupashtra Kipasindhya Pratap Tichanam Pavadeva Vashimabhanam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today is October 10th, 2022, in Hillsborough, North Carolina. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 39, Text 35. Tastatatapyatirviksya Swaprasthane yaduttama Santavyam asasa premayar Ayasya iti dotakai Please chant. Then the gopis. Tata. Thus. Tapatihi. Lamenting. Viksha. Sing. Swaprasthane. As he was leaving. Yadu Uttamaha. The greatest of the Yadus. Santavyam Asa. He consoled them. Sa Premai. Full of love. Ayasye iti. I will return. Dotyakai. With words sent through a messenger. This is again Krishna going to Mathura with Akura. BBT translation. As he departed, that best of the Yadus saw how the gopis were lamenting, and thus he controlled them by sending a messenger with this loving promise, I will return.
Console.
Okay, I'll read this again. As he departed, thank you. That best of the Yadus saw how the gopis were lamenting, and thus he consoled them by sending a messenger with this loving promise, I will return. Okay, let's look at Krishna book. Okay, we have to back up a little bit because it's all one sentence. The cowherd men of Gokula followed behind on their wagons, and the young gopis also walked behind for some distance. But then they became placated by Krishna's glances and gestures and pacified by a message from him that said, I will return. Okay, there's no BBT purport. So we're going to read Jiva Goswami's and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Some say that in the information delivered by the messengers, we notice here it's plural messengers, he said, I will come in my other forms, spruti, not personally. This is not true. The word iti at the end of the statement, ayasi iti, does not indicate that. The gopis would also be extremely disappointed if such a message came saying that he would return as a spruti only. This idea is refuted when Uddhava delivers his message of, infallible Krishna, the Lord of the devotees, will soon return to Raja to satisfy his parents. That's Bhagavatam 10, 46, 34. This verse says that he sent words through many messengers, Do Takyai, in secret, filled with prema and with promises and with no deceit. The phrase best of the Yadus, Yad Uttama, indicates that Krishna was going to give protection to the Yadus. The future tense is used, ayasye, to indicate the present or very near future, I am coming. This would happen after he killed Dantavakra, as mentioned in the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda. This will be quoted later. So that was Jiva Goswami's commentary. We'll look at Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Seeing the gopis burning in torment, Chapyatir Santa Prayamaha, that best of the Yadus, who was now inclined to protect the Yadus, I found this very significant, consoled the gopis by sending through messengers thousands of assurances to increase their faith so that they would regain full consciousness. Ka is added to do takyai to indicate that the messages were full of compassion. Krishna said, quote, I will return quickly. Just as your hearts are breaking at the thought of our separation, similarly my heart is also breaking. I am dependent on you. When with the tongue of my mind I lick the sweet liquor of your smiling, sidelong glances, what a poetic expression Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has, which are rarely found in all the three worlds, my life becomes fulfilled. If I do not return the day after tomorrow, then both you and I will lose our lives. But if I live because of a long lifespan or because of expectation of reunion, this life will be more painful than a million deaths, unquote. Thus Krishna solaced the gopis with such words imbued with the nectar of pure love. Tastata tapyatir viksha swa prasthane yaru tamaha santavyam ashasa premayar ayasya iti do takai. As he departed, that best of the Yadus saw how the gopis were lamenting, and thus he consoled them by sending a messenger with this loving promise, I will return. So here we see how Krishna loves his devotees. Yeah. So when we talk about loving Krishna, Krishna is also loving us. It's reciprocal. It's not... often the conception of God in this world that many religions have is that God isn't very loving. Yeah, he's just this kind of angry, jealous God that says, you know, you have to love me and serve me or you're going to burn in eternal fire. I've often pointed out if any ordinary parent did that, they'd be arrested. Isn't it? Right? If you don't love me, I'm going to torture you for eternity. I'm going to torture you at all, you know, like... So this kind of a God is not really very lovable. This is a concept of God kind of like a Ravana who says to Sita, you know, you love me or I'm going to eat you. You know, Prabhupada talks about this. He says, you know, there's a difference between love and rape. You know, it's not like you just say to somebody, well, if you don't love me, I'm going to kill you and cut you up and eat you. Or, you know, dictators do this kind of thing, right? If we think about like Hitler's and Stalin's and Mussolini's, and where they're just, you know, you have to serve me, you have to be loyal to me, or I'm going to torture you and kill you. And in fact, many religions have behaved as messengers. Like here we have Krishna sending a message of love. And he's sending that message of love through his own gestures. And it's, you know, the way the acharyas are explaining this is that this is an ongoing thing. That it's not just that Krishna's giving a message as he's leaving through some messenger, but all the time that he's in Mathura and Dwarka, he's sending these various messages of love. You know, we have Uddhava's message, which is quoted in the commentary, but there's many, many messages being sent back and forth, right? We can imagine, we don't have to imagine, but you know, if somebody goes to war in a foreign country, which is basically what Krishna was doing, right? He was going to battle in a foreign country. So the soldier often sends messages back to their beloved, their spouse, their beloved, isn't it? Right? And you have many instances where the spouse that's back in the country, they keep a box full of all these letters. So Krishna's sending these messages of love, but when people have an idea of God as just this angry, jealous God, and they act as the messenger, just think about all the different times when religious people saying, I'm acting as God's messenger, instead of giving a message of the love of God for the people, to the people, give a message of the anger of God toward the people. So I recently read a book that had a whole description of Christianity's history of persecution. How the official Christian church, we're not just talking about some rogue person who calls himself a Christian, but the official Christian church would issue documents, you know, go to foreign lands and kill anyone who's not a Christian, take their property, steal all their wealth, you know, we have instances right in this hemisphere where especially the Spaniards and the Portuguese, in the name of the church, with the official written blessing of the church, would say to people, if you convert to Christianity, I'll kill you quickly, and if you don't convert, I'll torture you, and either way, I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to steal all of your gold. And this wasn't done just to non-Christians. The Catholics were torturing the Protestants. In fact, that's a big part of the history of how America came to be settled by Europeans. That the main Europeans that came here to settle were running away. They were various Protestant groups running away from Catholic persecution. Right? And we have someone who says, well, I'm going to translate the Bible into the local language and distribute it. And he was tortured and killed. His body was dismembered and not given a proper burial. And he was called a heretic because he wanted to print the Bible in local language. So this is, of course, the two main religions guilty of this are Christianity and Islam, which are the two biggest religions in the world. I think Christianity has like 29% of the population and Islam like 23% or something. And each of these religions, they're acting as the messengers of God, but they're not bringing a message of love. They're bringing a message of hatred. They're bringing a message of persecution. And often the persecution and the hatred is the worst towards members of their own religion that have slightly different beliefs and practices. What to speak of people in other religions, but often the worst persecution is of their own members. Right? So this concept of God, you know, where you're just loving God out of fear, you just don't want to go to eternal hell. No. People are not inclined to love a God like that. They're not interested in loving a God like that. They turn away from religion. They say, what is the use of religion if it simply makes people cruel? You know, I've thought many times, especially since reading this one section of this book, how Prabhupada would criticize Christians in particular, but the same is true of most religionists in other religions. That Christ said, thou shalt not kill, and they're killing. And Prabhupada was talking primarily about the killing of animals. But what about the killing of other people? The killing of your own brothers and sisters in Christ. You know, you're killing them. And nowadays, that killing is not going on so much, but people are being ostracized or being criticized. Oh, you're in this church instead of that church, so you're going to hell, and that kind of thing. So this is not God. This is the God that we worship is messengers of love. Now you can say, well, Krishna also says that the demons are going to hell, yes? And Prabhupada talks about this in his purports in the Bhagavad Gita, especially in the 16th chapter, where Krishna says, you know, I throw the demons perpetually into lower species of life. And Prabhupada says, how can we advertise that God is merciful when he's not merciful to the demons? But of course he's merciful to the demons, Prabhupada says, if he happens to kill them, he's merciful to them. But he's also merciful to them in the sense that that's what the demons actually want. Demons actually want to be in a position that to a pious person appears to be hellish. And my evidence of this is when I was at the Woodstock Festival, the one in Poland, and we were taking a Rath Yatra through the festival. And as we went past one group of people, they were all dressed in black, and they had makeup and hair to make them look like monsters. I mean, they really looked like demons. Like we're about to have Halloween, you know, people enjoy looking like demons. So they looked like demons, like literally. And then they were playing something which I assume that they considered to be music. But it sounded like animals growling. I mean, it sounded like, you know, wolves growling in the forest and bears growling. And it was just, you know, it reminded me of something that C.S. Lewis said. He said, in heaven there's either silence or music, but in hell there's noise. And I thought, these people, they want to be in hell. They think hell is a very nice place. they want to be on the lower planets with hideous demons listening to noise. You know, so this is also love of the Lord. If someone is, I want to be a demon and I want to listen to noise, Krishna says, fine, there's a planet for you right here. You can have what you want. So it is not really a punishing mood of the Lord. And Prabhupada writes in the first canto that Krishna very regretfully punishes the demons. And again, for the demons, it's what they want. So here, looking at the Lord's love, and we're seeing the Lord's love in two ways. One, we're seeing the Lord's love for the Yadus, and the other is we're seeing the Lord's love for the residents of Vrindavan. Both are operating at the same time, and at this particular time, in this particular verse, especially, that love is kind of in conflict with one another. Does that make sense? We have Yadutama, he's the best of the Yadus, and yet he's being pulled by his love for the Yadus, and he's also being pulled by his love for the residents of Vrindavan. So I've recently been rereading teachings of Lord Chaitanya. I read this book for the first time when I was still in the university, and I got totally stuck on the chapter that I'm just about to read again of all the different items in the different hands of the Lord. I thought that I had to like memorize that before I could go on in the book, and so I didn't finish it at that time. And then I just thought, this is way too complicated. And then many years ago I went and read it again, but recently I read it again and I'm like, this is an amazing book. So if you haven't picked up, I'm going to get a little advertisement here, we're going to pause for a commercial. If you haven't read Teachings of Lord Chaitanya in a while, especially if you think, well, I've been reading Chaitanya Charitamrita over and over again, so why would I have to read Teachings of Lord Chaitanya? Prabhupada published that as like a summary before the CC. I would strongly advise you, pick up the Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Like, wow. Okay, so here Srila Prabhupada's talking about different forms of the Lord, and I felt this was very relevant to this love for the Yadus and love for the Gopis. So this chapter is called His Forms Are One and the Same, I think, yes, chapter 6. Prabhupada said, as far as Krishna is concerned, when he manifested himself in different forms, each and every one of them was a separate individual. Now, I have a feeling that I could meditate on that one sentence for a few years and not really understand it. How is God one? There's one God, and Prabhupada in this chapter will say that all the forms are the same God. And yet, when Krishna expands into different forms, each form is a separate individual. And Prabhupada makes the point here that it's not like the expansions of the yogis, like Saurabhi Muni. And Prabhupada wrote here that when Narada Muni saw Krishna expanded in each palace in Dwarka, I really like this too, he was astonished at this. Yet Narada is never astonished to see the expansion of the body of a yogi, since he knows the trick himself. I thought that was really cool. So he's a separate individual. All right, then Prabhupada says in the next paragraph, And he's talking about, again, Krishna in different forms doing different things. And he says these different activities are called actions in the Lord's different emotions. And then when he is in these emotional forms, the expansions are known as Vaibhava Prakash. So these different expansions, Krishna as the Yarutama and Krishna as Vrijendanandana, are what Prabhupada calls emotional forms. Again, that's just like... I feel that's something that we could discuss for years, right? Okay, going on a few more paragraphs. This also just like... So, Prabhupada's talking again about Krishna's forms in Vrindavan, in Mathura, in Vaikuntha, and he says, in his personal form, he is just like a cowherd boy, and he thinks himself that. But when he is in the Vasudeva form, he thinks himself the son of a Kshatriya, and he feels himself also to be a Kshatriya, a princely administrator. So, you know, we talk about Sarvapati Vinirmuktan, giving up our particular identities. Right? Somebody has, I'm a plumber, and somebody has, I'm a scholar, and somebody has, I'm a lawyer. So this is, it's like that, it's career. You know, are you a cowherd boy or are you a prince? That's your job. And when Krishna is in his cowherd boy form, he's thinking, I'm a cowherd boy. He's actually feeling like that. Prabhupada uses the word feels. He feels himself to be a cowherd boy. He thinks of himself like that. I am a cowherd boy. He feels like a cowherd boy. And when he's in his Vasudeva form, he feels, I'm a Kshatriya. I'm a member of the government. I'm a prince. So these mundane designations we have that we're supposed to let go of, they have their counterpart in real designations. I mean, that's beyond, right? Often the scriptures will say, like, God has no name. God has no designation. How can you pin down God to a designation? This is the quarrel that the impersonalists have with the personalists. But there are transcendental designations. Krishna's actually feeling, I am a cowherd boy. I am a prince. Okay, going on another couple paragraphs. Krishna Prabhupada says the same thing, but he expands it. Sometimes the Lord thinks himself a cowherd boy, and sometimes he thinks himself the son of Vasudeva, a Kshatriya, and this thinking of Krishna is called pastimes. So Krishna thinks, I am a cowherd boy, feels like a cowherd boy, and that's what we call pastimes. You know, the pastimes are not just, and my friend Srimati Vrindavan made this point to me many years ago, the pastimes are not plots. You know, sometimes we get hung up on the plot. This happened, and this happened, and this happened. And we find that different acharyas will sometimes describe the plot differently. We'll say, how is that possible? Didn't this happen and this happen? It must have been at that time or that time. But the lila is not really about the plot. I mean, in any thing in life, in the life that we live, or in theatrical life, in a book, it's not about the plot. It's about the emotions, isn't it? Rasa is the emotions. The story of our life is not just a story of this happened to me, that happened to me, I did this, I went there. It's a story of our relationships. It's a story of our emotions. It's a story of our desires. And that's the essence of these pastimes. So Krishna right now, when he's leaving Vrindavan, in fact, he wouldn't be leaving Vrindavan otherwise. It's because he adopts this thinking and feeling that I am a Yadu. Which we discussed a little bit in previous verses, that Akura comes and, hey, you're a Yadu. We talked about how Balaram was referred to like that. And so there's a shift here, where Krishna is identifying himself, thinking and feeling as a Yadu, therefore he's willing as a Yadu. I have to protect, and that's what Jiva Goswami says in his commentary. I have to protect the Yadus. They're in danger. Kamsa's there. You know, here I've killed all these demons in Vrindavan that Kamsa sent, but the origin of these demons, Kamsa himself, is harassing the Yadus, my devotee. But at the same time, we see here in this verse that he still loves his Raja devotees. It's not that just because he's shifted, so to speak, into being this, as Prabhupada says, separate individual of I am a prince, I am a Yadu, that the love for the gopis is gone. You know, materially, this often happens. We've all had so many lives, and in our different lives, we shift our love to different persons and different places according to our designation, isn't it? Like when Chitraketu's son is brought back to life, and Narada, or who was with him, Parvati? Said, who was it?
Parvati.
And they say, here are your mother and father lamenting for you. And the soul brought back into the body looks around and says, I've had so many lives. Who are my mother and father? In which life were these my mother and father? So guaranteed, in our previous life, we had a particular designation that was somewhat different than our current designation. And in that designation, we had affection for certain jivas and certain roles. That's different from the affection we have, and we've forgotten that. We've completely forgotten that. Someone who was my mother and father in my previous life, I may have nothing whatsoever to do with them. And in fact, sometimes those we love in one life becomes those we hate in another life. So, but Krishna's not like that. It's not that when Krishna is in this mood of a Yadu, being there as a separate individual with a separate thinking and a separate feeling, that removes his thinking and feeling for the gopis. And this fact should be very consoling for us. That in whatever form the Lord is, whatever sense of a separate individuality he has, however he is associating himself, which creates his pastimes, he's always sending messages of love to all of his devotees in the particular mood and form that they want to worship. Lord Kapiladev says this. He says that the Lord takes the form that the devotee worships him. You know, we have some idea in this world like that, that the persons that I love will become what I want them to be. Parents especially do this to their children, isn't that? They try to make their children the kind of person they want to love. You know, when you conceive a child, you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, in Vedic times, they had it. You could take a certain payasa, you know, and you'd get a certain kind of child. You could, like, you know, use eugenics and order your child. It didn't always work. Like, didn't work with King Unga and his son Vena. Sometimes the order got mangled. And like with Parasaram's father, you know, they got switched. But nowadays, people just don't know when you have a kid what you're getting. At least before you marry someone, you can do some, you know, have some idea of what they're like. And so you get this child, and then the parents try to mold the child into being what they want. Right? But anyone who's a parent, and anyone who's a child of a parent, knows that that doesn't absolutely work. Probably none of us became exactly what our parents had in mind, and probably none of our children became exactly what we had in mind. And people think that with their spouse, you know, I'm going to make my wife be what I want her to be, I'm going to make my husband be what I want him to be, and then we're disappointed. But Krishna actually, having unlimited forms, Adwaita Machuta Manadi Mananta Rupam, he actually becomes whatever the devotee wants him to be. And it's very specific, like the form that Krishna married each of the 16,108 queens. Each of those forms was slightly different, because each queen had a slightly different relationship. So Krishna appears slightly different. Sanatana Goswami says that Krishna has unlimited qualities, and each jiva is especially attracted to a particular quality. So in whatever form the Lord is, he's sending messages of love to each devotee according to their specific relationship. Right? And Jiva Goswami, Jiva Krishnath, I can't remember, they listed that these messages were secret messages. They're very confidential. They're between the Lord and each Jiva. Right? Like we're told that we shouldn't disclose all of the aspects of our personal relationship with God, right? Srimati Radharani says it's like you put out a little flame that gets blown out in the wind. Right? We have Rajaguhyam, Krishna says, these secret, general secrets of bhakti that are only revealed to the faithful, but then there's individual secrets of love. The messages are filled with love, they're filled with promise, and there's no deceit. When Krishna says, I will return, he will return. And Krishna says, I will return in person, not as an impression, not as a smriti, not as some impression, which is what we sadhakas may just get, some impression of Krishna, but actually in person. And I thought this fact that Krishna in his different manifestations with his different thinking and feeling is still sending messages of love according to the individuals is a way that we can find a mediation of a particular paradox in the Bhagavad Gita. So in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada writes in the purport, I forget which verse, that one can fix his mind on any form of the Lord, and he lists some of them like Ram, the Singha, Varaha. And then in 1865 purport, Prabhupada says one should fix one's mind only on Krishna and not divert his attention to any of the other forms like Ram, the Singha, Varaha. Of course, it's also charming that in that purport, Srila Prabhupada says that one should meditate on the form of Krishna who is standing before Arjuna with flute and peacock feather. And I'm like, but Prabhupada, Krishna wasn't standing before Arjuna with... I always feel like I want to say, Srila Prabhupada, but Krishna wasn't standing before Arjuna with flute and peacock feathers. So this is Prabhupada... What's happening there? It's the same thing that's happening here in this verse. When Srila Prabhupada meditates on Krishna at the Battle of Kurukshetra with Arjuna, he's seeing Krishna with flute and peacock feathers. And the same when the devotees like Gopakumar, when he goes to Vaikuntha and he sees Lord Vishnu, he keeps seeing him as Krishna in Vrindavan, right? He keeps seeing the Yadus as the cowherd boys. Same happens when he goes to Ayodhya and sees Ram. But the opposite happens, we were just hearing yesterday so wonderful about Murari Gupta. When Murari Gupta sees Krishna, he sees Ram. And even when God himself says to him, stop just seeing Ram, see Krishna. He's like, I can't do it. I have to die. When Murari Gupta sees Mahaprabhu, he sees Ram. When he sees Krishna, he sees Ram. When Ramananda Roy sees Mahaprabhu, he sees Radha Krishna. So in this way, everything is adjusted. When one is in love with Krishna, even when he's worshipping Ram, when he's worshipping Nisinga, when we chant the Nisinga prayers in front of Radha Golokananda, you know, I look at Golokananda, I'm like, do you really look like a lion? Like, how do you do that? Just like, what happens to your nails, you know? I see these sharp nails, it's like... My friend Srimati also said when she sees Nisingadev in Mayapur, she always sees him just laughing. So God is love. He is loving. He's loving even when he appears not to be loving. He's always loving. And his messages are always loving and personal. And we ourselves should be messengers of that. If we want people to take up religion, yes? And we'd especially like people to take up our religion, I assume. So we should be messengers of how God is having a personal, loving relationship with everyone. Otherwise, people will justifiably say, why do I want to surrender to a God that's just like a big Hitler in the sky? Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisement?
An interesting point in the self-professed religious preferences.
Mm-hmm.
I looked it up real quick. You know, the Christians are like 31, and the Muslims are 22, and then Hinduism and another religion almost tied 15 each, and the other religion is atheism.
Ah.
The third biggest
religion in the world is atheism, tied with Hindus for 15.
Because they don't want to surrender to that kind of angry God.
Yeah.
That almost half the population ascribes to.
Exactly. Yeah, the majority of people who become atheists say, I don't want to surrender to this angry God. Yeah, half the people in the world are representing religion as this really nasty fellow. You know? Yeah. It's a fact. And it's very unfortunate. Anybody else? So just like yesterday, we had our love feast, right? So thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.